I already know what you all are thinking, because as I was reading, I think that was going through your mind was, is he going to read the rest of the Gospel of John? It seemed to go on forever and ever, didn't it? This is a very long passage, and unfortunately, we only have like 41 or 42 Sundays to go through the Gospel of John this year, so some sacrifices had to be made. And I would usually preach this section probably in about four or five sermons by itself. So here we go, sermon number one. You ready? No, I'm going to try and condense it down to be a much more comprehensive idea, since it really is one long dialogue with Jesus and these people that he's speaking with at the temple. I'm going to try and condense it down to what was the core of what he was saying in this passage. Now, you guys remember that last week's passage, when we were looking at the woman who was brought to Jesus and she was caught in adultery, that passage was potentially not a part of Gospel of John originally. That the manuscript evidence for it is very weak, and that our earliest manuscripts of the Gospel of John don't include it at all. In fact, we don't have a copy of the Gospel of John before the 500s that has that story in it. And in a couple different places, we find that story in different places in John, or we'll find it even in the Gospel of Luke in one different manuscript. And so it's not necessarily that story belonged there, but I think it belongs in Scripture as a whole, and there was no real other place to put it, so we preached it there. But we kind of divided up a longer section with that story. So what did we talk about 2 weeks ago? Do you guys remember? No? Why do I stand up here every week? 2 weeks ago, I'll remind you, we talked about Jesus saying that if anybody believes in him, out of him, and I think he's referring to himself, will flow streams of living water, and that is that Jesus will be a source of everlasting life. And if you believe in him, if you want to be sustained in him, then, or if you want to be sustained for all eternity, then you will have to place your trust and your faith and your belief completely in him. And he's making a reference during a time, during the Feast of the Tabernacles, where they celebrate a whole week of feasting. And one of the things that the priests do is they follow this underground stream, this underground spring that originates right near the temple. And it goes down through the city and it pours out into the pool of Siloam. And that's where the priests go, and they will dip a cup, and then they'll ceremoniously bring that back up to the temple, representing that God is present in this place, and out of this temple, out of this place, are the flow of eternal water that will sustain the people of Israel. So when Jesus is saying that out of him will flow these streams of living water, Jesus is replacing the temple with himself, and saying that the temple is not where you will find your hope and your salvation, but rather I am where you're going to find your hope and your salvation. And remember that the Feast of Tabernacles, or the Feast of Ingatherings, is kind of a dual celebration. It serves as a celebration of the harvest, but it also serves as a celebration of the years of wandering in the desert, where the Jews were following after Yahweh, their God, at nighttime, a pillar of fire, and at daytime, a pillar of cloud. You remember that? And so Jesus here is continuing on these wild and crazy statements, referring to himself as God or as the temple or whatever, placing himself in the central place among the worship of the people of the Jews. And so when he says today, I am the light of the world, in the context of the Feast of the Tabernacles, one of the first things that a Jew would probably think of is the fire that led the people of Israel through the desert. Now, what was the fire? The fire was the presence of God among the people of Israel, right? That was the manifestation of God's presence with them to guide them. And so Jesus is essentially, right at the beginning of this passage, saying, I'm God. And yet none of them really takes it that way right away. They begin to ask him questions and probe. And the reason why they're asking him a lot of questions is because they know the implications of what he's saying. Now, this is the second of seven great I am statements in the Gospel of John. We haven't talked about this yet because we've only looked at one of them, but I thought since now we're on the second one, we should talk about it. There are seven statements that Jesus makes in the Gospel of John where he says, I am something. I am the bread of life. I am this week the light of the world. And these seven statements are incredibly important because it seems like the structure of the Gospel of John kind of hinges around these different I am statements where Jesus is essentially equating himself to God in the Old Testament. And so this week we get our second one, I am the light of the world. So we'll have five more left to go. And so Jesus is teaching the people and he's telling them that it's in him, it's following him that they're going to find their way, that they're going to get their way to paradise or salvation or the promised land. It's only in following after him. So he's standing in front of the people and he's teaching them and they begin asking him questions. And as he answers their questions, I think that we see some significant things about what it means that he's the light of the world. The first thing that I see is that he reveals God's truth. That Jesus isn't here on earth to create his own truth or to mold things in his liking, but instead he's here as the obedient Son of the Father, revealing all the will of God to the people, to human race. And so he is revealing God's truth, what God desires for creation, for his creation, and how he desires for his creation to act and to be, and how he is planning to bring his creation back into reconciliation with him, how he's going to heal the divide that is between human beings and God. And so he's being very intentional here to tell us that that is his intention, that he's wanting to reveal God's truth, to expose God's truth. And if you think about a light, what does a light do? Reveals things, right? I'll tell you a story, and then everybody will wonder if I am a responsible enough person to have around kids. We had things so dark in the church, and we had black lights in the Mitchell Hall, and we had tables set up as barriers where kids can kind of hide and pop out from and stuff like that. And there were several times through the night where I was standing in the hall, and I heard a big boom. And I'd look, and there was a kid who had run into the front of the table and flipped all the way over it. Why? Because the lights were so low, they couldn't see the tables. And so they occasionally ran into the tables, and we kept telling them, is it smart to run in the dark? No, it's not. So be careful. Don't run around like crazy. But the truth is that the light reveals what is around, reveals what the environment is, reveals the truth. And so if we were to turn the lights on in that room, right, what would everybody automatically notice? Oh, there's tables there. Maybe I shouldn't run full speed in that direction. And so they would know what is around them. And Jesus is saying that is what he is. That when he comes into this world, he like turns on a switch. He reveals that which was hidden before and allows us to see the world as it truly is, see it how God intends it to be, and then we are allowed and able to follow what God's perfect will is because he's revealing it to us. The second thing that I see Jesus talking about here is that he has the authority to judge. But the ironic thing is, even though he has the authority to judge, because he is the force that's exposing the reality, right? Exposing the corruption, the sin, the darkness of the human race, even in the chosen people of God, right there in the temple structure that was meant to bring hope and shine light to the nations, even there was corruption and there was darkness. And here is Jesus exposing it. And so he has the authority as the light to judge the world. Since he's revealing the truth, he's shining a light on everything, he has the authority to judge it, and yet he chooses not to judge it. That wasn't his purpose. What he came to do is to judge sin and death on the cross, and he later talks about that in the passage when he says, lift me up and you will know what I was here for when you raise me up. You will know what God the Father sent me for. And so he has the authority to judge. He has the authority to pour out judgment and condemnation on all people, but he's deferred his judgment so that judgment might be poured on him, that he might bring us salvation by taking on our sins. The third thing is that he sets free those who are in slavery to sin to become sons and daughters. So he makes this grandiose statement, and he says that the Jews, all those standing in front of him, if they've sinned, they're a slave to sin. Now, this statement is way more significant than we see it in our mind, because in their culture, the Jewish people were better than the Gentiles. It doesn't matter if you sin or you don't sin, because you are the chosen people of God. You are the chosen ones of God. It doesn't matter if you're a sinner or not. If you're a Jew, you are better than everybody else. And Jesus says, no, if you sin, you are a slave to sin. And if you're a slave to sin, you're equal to everyone else who also sins. That includes Gentiles. It's a radical statement for a Jewish teacher to say in front of a Jewish context, in front of the Jewish audience, that you are all no better than Gentiles. Ooh, that would be very offensive in the first century where Jesus was teaching. And then he talks about his role as the light, that if he is going to expose the truth, the corruption of the people, but he is not going to judge it, but rather take the judgment upon himself, then he is actually providing freedom for the rest of us. Because for all of eternity, none of the rest of us have to worry about the sin and shame that we have in our life, or the shame and guilt that we have in our life from sin. Because Jesus has already exposed it, and he's already taken on the punishment for it. And so we can be vulnerable with each other. We can confess what we've done wrong with each other and not worry about condemnation. We don't have to hide behind our little bush like Adam and Eve did anymore. We could come out into the light and